This is one of those weeks where I think if you don't normally watch the Tuesday presser, it is worth your time. There's over an hour of Tim Lester, Phil Parker, and LeVar Woods. And if you're an Iowa football fan, this is gold. They're just giving out tons of goodies, answering questions, talking about this team in detail with enthusiasm. This is fun stuff. David and I, we're going to break it down. Let's have a day. Let's go. But it ain't KF this week. We got the coordinators. I'm very excited. There's so much.
Yeah.
There's so much. Have you written 10 stories about this already? God, there's so much. Yeah, I like to watch it. I don't go through the transcript. I quite honestly wouldn't even know where to find it. So got on there. 47 minutes worth of Tim Lester and Coach Parker.
I don't know why it cut off LeVar.
Yeah, and then the video went weird, the audio was still going, and then it like cut and he was on a completely different question. So I don't know how long LeVar stood there.
He was probably up there for 15 minutes. I mean, he went in depth on a couple different things. So I'm a little bit surprised.
That one, the video was 17 minutes long, so he was probably there for closer to 20, and then we got like 2 or 3 minutes cut off. But we got plenty of LeVar. I don't even know if we'll get there. I wrote down so many things. I definitely want to touch on all three. I'm gonna have to call this something different this week. It's just gonna be the press review show because there was no KF. I'm sure he loved that. Got to hang out and not talk to us.
Yeah,
but we did get to hear from the other three, and it's really, I don't know. Maybe it's just today. I know I just saw your tweet. You're on four espresso shots today.
You got it going right here, bud.
That's insane.
I just cracked it open.
Oh, that's good. You're not totally.
To be fair, though, like, I didn't mean to do it. Their coffee brewer was broke. So they're like, oh, we can give you an Americano. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. I'm like, all right, sure. Because I'm straight black coffee, espresso. Like, that's it. I don't do lattes. I don't do any of this other stuff. And then after I ordered it, she goes, do you want to add any shots? And she was like, there's four in there. And I'm like, nope, I'm good.
Who? Jesus Christ.
Dan Campbell?
And also, yeah,
that's the only person.
Doesn't he do two quad shots every morning?
So he does two venti black coffees from Starbucks, and he adds two double espresso in each of them.
Jesus Christ. That's too much. Gonna die. Anyway.
Yeah, I am. Just tried it.
Well, no, he is, and maybe you will as well. Burnt my mouth on an Americano one time and never just – I was like,
just scarred you. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, I don't even care if it was good or not. I'm never ordering one of these again. It kind of felt like not Tim Lester or LeVar. They gave us at least the energy that they normally do. Coach Parker felt like maybe he was on an espresso yesterday. I felt like he was a little bit more.
He was a little bit more edgy, I'll call it, than usual. And it was very interesting to me because I was curious how he was going to do his opening statement, just considering that the defense really hasn't been what we expected thus far, I think it's fair to say. But he brought up, through four games last year,
he brought the stats.
Points this year. But, like, he brought up all the good ones first, and I was a little bit surprised by that, to say the least.
Just because you feel like he would be one to like really hone in on the bad stuff.
I wouldn't say that, but I think with the as senior led as this defense is, I thought he'd a little bit more pinpoint and just have a little bit more venom when he was focusing in on some of the negative stuff. Not that he's going to be fully negative in front of the media, and that's 100% by strategy, and I respect it. But I thought he'd be a little bit more
to the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like of the three, he was maybe the most vague and the most, not like intentionally, but I got the vibe from him. Let me see if I can, I wrote down like a general feel of like the vibe of his entire 20, whatever minutes was there's more to meets the eye with defense. There's a lot of things that have happened through four games that appear to be on one guy or on another guy or on one side of the defense or at one level of the defense. And he pretty much brought everything back to, like, you guys just don't even know. Like, you don't know what to call. You don't know what the check was. You don't know what we're trying to do, what I told him to do, if he's trying to cheat it this way. I mean, he got a little bit specific there on some certain things. He's like, there's a million different things on these plays. I don't know who tweeted it out yesterday. One of the other reporters did, but it was like, they were like, Parker's message is essentially just stop worrying. Like, don't worry. Like, they will get better. And
that's kind of the way I took away from it too. I think there's still a great deal of trust that he has in his guys and the defense that he's leading. And again, it kind of goes back to, I think we touched on last week. I think there'd be a lot more panic about this defense if it wasn't a group that had not gotten it done before. They've gotten it done before. And I think that's kind of my big thing. And I'm not even going to try to take too much away when they play Ohio State next week. Ohio State's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, that Jeremiah Smith might be the best freshman wide receiver I have ever seen in my entire life. He might be their number one receiver right now. And it, you know, I'm curious how Phil Parker and them try to, I don't want to say attack that offense, but try to limit that offense. But you're right. I think Phil Parker is a little bit more vague than he normally was. And, you know, not to flip it to Lester immediately, but Tim Lester was as specific as I've heard a coordinator talk. And I love it when coordinators and position coaches don't talk to us like we're dumb, because we learned something that helps us a lot more too.
I'll bring it back to Parker and we'll finish on some of his stuff before we move on. Cause I feel like Lester was the main event.
Star of the show. Yeah.
Oh my God. There is something so endearing about him. And I feel like, I feel like in coaching, there's an element of, okay, you know your stuff, you know the game, you're good with players, you can recruit, all this stuff, X's and O's. But there's this intangible, you know, like, players have an intangible. They just, this guy's a great leader. This guy, he just, you know, he's his work ethic. You can't really pin it. There's not something you can really measure it by. And I feel like in coaching, there's a little bit of that with endearment. Like, how, and man, you listen to coach, and maybe this is just because, and nothing against Brian Ferentz. I'm a huge Brian guy. You know, people, you know, I'll take that to my grave. People fault me that. I love Brian, his personableness, how he was personally with the players. Don't worry.
Relatability.
Sure. didn't go to class as much as I should have. But Tim Lester, man, he gets up there and it's like, I just love listening to this guy talk. And the YouTube comments reflected that as well. And the detail that he went into reflected that. And it was just like, oh, I could listen to 2 or 3 or 10 hours of this right here.
Easily.
And I think there's probably a thirst for that because Brian didn't give a lot of those specifics. And I don't know if it's because he didn't want to. I have a feeling that that's a lot of it. Or if Tim Lester's just better at communicating some of that X's and O's deeper stuff in a layman's way to the media, to anybody watching.
That's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah. And regardless of what the ratio is of why it's happening or why Lester's better on the mic in that sense, man, it's refreshing. It felt good. We'll get back to him in a second. Funniest part of the press conference was Docterman was talking about the big plays, and he said, I don't know what is Brockington or whatever the kid's name receiver was that caught the long pass.
Something like that.
He's like, you know, down the sideline, he got the long ball for the touchdown, and Phil Parker goes, did he catch it? He caught it. And he's like, well, that's what it was called. He's like, I don't know. I'm just asking you. I'm going off of what you said.
Yeah.
clearly, Coach Parker, that's just such a fun little, like, KF-style dig of, like, was it a catch? I'm still not sure it was a catch. Don't know how they called that a catch. We talked about it on our recap podcast.
I'm still confused by it, too. I really did not. I thought it was close. I think if they had called it incomplete on the field, then it would have resulted in it being incomplete.
Yeah.
I But it's the same thing about, like, we've kind of gotten away where we're so specific by the rule book to where people just don't let their eyes actually tell them what it is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's not a catch.
No, like, if you just watch it and you're just like, okay, did he catch that ball or not? You're like, no, I don't think he.
Well, especially KF after the game, too. We talk about, oh, yeah, we went 0 of 2 in reviews in this game or something like that. Like, he's so pissed off at
these
reviews when it comes to Minnesota.
Yeah, I love it.
Hysterical.
I laugh really hard. I actually put, did he catch it in my notes? And then just a bunch of ha, 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 like I'm texting somebody. God, it was funny. When Coach Parker drops a little joke or he tries to get some humor going, that's some bye week gold right there. You're just not going to find that if you're prepping for Ohio State. Which, by the way, the tone, the overall just tone of these, of the coordinators, it's so drastic if this game would have gone the different way.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. I was like, we talked about how this game, we briefly mentioned how if this game goes the other way and we're 2-2 right now, the entire inside the complex, the team themselves, the coaches, the media, the fans, man, the vibe is just so different.
Tyler, how'd you feel at halftime? We won't talk too much about the game, but I really want to hear about what you thought at halftime.
I didn't feel good. I mean, I didn't feel good. Yeah. I don't think I felt like maybe as – I'm a bad person to ask because I've said this a lot of times. Because of the position I was in as a long snapper, specialist, kicker, punter, long snapper, you basically like lobotomized any emotion out of you. Because interception happens. It's like, okay, as a specialist, you cannot let your emotions go up or down too much because emotions get in the way of process.
You have to be so level-headed.
And you have to be so level-headed and just, you know, at that level, if you're a starting specialist at the Division I level, there are no physical issues. You can kick a field goal. You can punt a spiral. You can snap a good ball. It's all about mental. And when you let emotion start to come in, which gets really tough when you start the game off and Imani Hooker is a pick six against Ohio State, I would love to just let the emotion ride there and just go nuts. And of course, sometimes I did. I would celebrate. But like, I have a field goal to snap, right?
Yep.
You know, Keith Duncan has it. You have to go perform your job. You can't celebrate like the rest of the guys because your job specifically is so mental. And mental is really affected by when you let emotion cloud that. So now as a fan, 6-7 years later, at 30 years old, I watch and enjoy the games in a similar box where I don't let myself, you know, they'll score and I won't really celebrate and bad things will happen and I'll just brush it off because I'm so used to that. But like, yeah, I would say I was somewhere in the middle, not nearly as down as a lot of fans were.
Okay.
I also probably look at the whole picture more than people do as opposed to like, hey, how is this game going? So at halftime, I'm sitting there thinking, well, there's generally a trend. There's generally reasons why things happen. We've had a couple games go not great in the first half, and then we just figure it out. So I had a feeling that there was a chance there. There wasn't a lot about Minnesota other than the one big play that we just talked about, which we don't think was a catch. There wasn't a lot that like made me feel like they were dangerous, right? And I was a part of 53 games where like we played a lot of close football games, right? So if we're in a close game, the guys at Iowa, they feel good about it. They don't feel bad. They don't feel nervous. They don't feel like it's out of reach. I was a little disappointed with the offense. I thought we definitely should have been running the ball better. But then the third quarter happened and it was like, okay. And Lester sort of talked about this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's like, he talked about his script and how it actually took him almost the entire first half to get through his openers because he is trying to figure stuff out. He's trying to, what should we do here? How are they going to play us here? And he said that's actually probably an issue from him, his standpoint. He needs to shorten.
He called a near flawless second half. I mean, just didn't need to throw the ball. Look, we can get into the passing offense. Hell, you and I could do an entire podcast on the passing offense.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts about what Lester said about yesterday, but again, he'll know more. He'll forget more about quarterback play than I'll ever know. Mm-hmm. I can only tell you from where I'm sitting. But, you know, I give him a lot of credit for that second half. I think you need to give the offensive line. How about Jacob Gill? I'm like, he is probably one of the most underappreciated players when he got to campus. I touched on him last week. I'm going to say it again. That 40-yard run that he had, Jacob took out two different players. He is not a big guy, Tyler.
No, he's like, not.
He is not a big guy. So for him to be able to make those blocks, and Les talked about yesterday when I asked him my question, and I wish I phrased it a little bit better, but I didn't want him to go down one rabbit hole or lead him one way or the other. I just kind of wanted him to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you heard the stat when I said it. Against stacked boxes this season, Caleb Johnson is averaging 10.6 yards a carry.
Yeah.
And has 6 touchdowns and 21 carries. The national average is 4.
Yeah.
Yards a carry against stacked boxes. And Lester went in depth about, we have more formations than most college teams right now. And that's why the passing offense is taking a while to be figured out, because we're running so many different things, the timing of the routes and all these other things. But he said, because we have so many formations, the passing game is going to be farther along. Once we reach a certain threshold, they're just going to kind of take off with it. But he said, because of all the formations, the wide receiver blocking and just the pre-snap movement, even against a stacked box, and if defenses know what's coming, they still have to think about 3 or 4 or 5 different things because it's not so cut and dry. So when he went in depth on that, it was really, really telling to me that, one, very early still, Iowa hired the right guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Two, he's trying to do different things. And if just because the results are not there, you have to look at the overarching process. And three, and this is a completely fair point, a lot of Iowa's primary playmakers, they didn't exactly get a lot of time with him in the spring and in the summer.
That is the second note that I wrote down. It is bolded on my notes here. I think that we get caught up, all good stuff there. And I want to come back to his response to your question, because I was sitting there like eyes glued, ears glued. I was like, oh wow, this is not something I've heard before.
Yeah.
We maybe on the outside, because it's just so easy, like, oh, Iowa football's here, they're in camp right now. Okay, they finished camp. It's week one. Like, we don't see any of the work. We are blind to it.
Yep.
I know about it. I know what those days look like, feel like, how long it feels, the amount of stuff that gets done. But now, as a freaking podcaster in my walkie basement, like, I'm also just like, I'm numb to it. I just sit here. You and I wake up. We don't go to the complex. We don't have 45 plays on the script today to practice and get work in and advance this offensive system. We just expect. We, as in you, me, and the fans, all just expect, oh, they're going to – it's game one. It's game three. It's game four. Like, they should have everything in, and everything should be tip-top shape, right? And then he said he mentioned, oh, yeah, by the way, like, yeah, I was here in the spring. Like, didn't have Cade. Didn't have Sully. Didn't have Gill. Lachey practiced one day. Reese Vandersee was at senior prom.
Yep.
And then he makes the comment at the end of that statement. He goes, we basically started this thing 8 weeks ago. And my mind was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really, really something that we need to like spend a moment on.
Yes.
Collectively on the outside of the program right now. They have 8 weeks with all of the guys that they're trying to run it with on game days where they've been able to work. And within those 8 weeks, really, you've got 3 or 4 or 5 days a week.
Yep.
They're in the second inning of installing this offense. And I get it. That sucks. No excuses. They've had to install. And I love the way that Lester talked about it. I think Docterman asked about it. He's like, you know, you talked about early on, right when you came in, we have to find what works the best for this offense now and get really good at that. But the way that Lester talks, it feels like they have 40% of what he wants in right now. And
this is what we talked about last week, remember? And I think it was something to do with learning the new offense. And plus, there's some limitations, I still think, at quarterback. Like, this is not Tim Lester's passing scheme. I'm telling you that right now. He has so many more downfield plays that Iowa has not even tried, and I'm sure you wrote down that down too, and we'll get into that. But this is a different offense right now than we will see next season.
Yep.
Next season's going to look completely different. I'm not sitting here saying, oh, by golly, Iowa's going to take the Big Ten by storm with its offense. But there's going to be teams next year that are going to be very, very surprised about the way Iowa runs its offense next season.
Yeah. Lester's the offense is handicapped right now by time. They just haven't had time in the game. And actually, the first thing he started with was what he calls time on task. That's the first note I had. He said, this is an advanced system, and a week like this is so important because we've had 8 weeks. We get 12% of what we've had total to add on to the ones, the twos, the threes, all getting reps in this offense, especially a week where the opponent is us. We're just fighting against us, trying to install as much more as we can. God, there's so much more. And so I think the point I wanted to make there was like, hey, on the outside, I know it's frustrating, but this is sort of the nitty gritty nuance of when you say, oh, it's year one, we have to give him time. This is why you have to give them time. And I get it. We play Ohio State next weekend. We have six more games on the schedule, ideally a bowl game. But when you break it down, like, this is the reality. And
yeah,
it's going to look different, especially as guys continue to catch on.
It's also worth noting, too, I think there's a little bit of angst and pressure from the fan base because of the team that we all know that we think they can be in terms of making a college football playoff push, looking at the future schedules, replacing so much next season. Mm-hmm. So there's an extra level of, I don't want to say accountability, but there's pressure to get this thing right immediately. And that's not a fair situation to Lester.
No.
But I also am not blaming the fan base and the media for almost applying that pressure.
No.
Because there's just so many different factors that are going into this situation. And I like what you said about year one. Because guess who saved his job this year? And I said, I'm going to wait until year three. If there's no progress by year three, you have to make a change.
Mr. And that's George Barnett
and the offensive line.
Yeah.
They have been so much better this season. Health, experience, veteran leadership. Yes, they can still grow and improve. We know that. But look at what they're doing in the run game compared to what they were the last couple of seasons. Like Barnett took over, you know, I'll just be honest, kind of a fucked up situation, Tyler.
It was.
He got there. It wasn't. Yeah, it was not ideal.
It was, man, what could I even call it? It was a combination. We did a whole podcast on this. Me and Drake did one time. Basically, you had a couple guys miss. You missed in recruiting on a couple guys. You got a couple guys randomly just retire or like have to medically retire or quit for some reason. And you had a couple guys leave early for the NFL. And those three factors, you had a couple guys in each box, left you with basically a decimated offensive line room, of which you just had to pick the scraps up from 3 years ago and say,
hey, George Barnett told me this media day from the two, because I asked him about coming full circle, like what the expectations are reflecting back from year one. And he and I had probably a 10-minute one-on-one about it. And he just said, I'll keep it real with you, David. We had maybe two Big Ten starting caliber linemen year one. And he'd obviously, I wouldn't ask for names. I think we can kind of watch the tape and tell, you know, and you can tell. But he is not wrong in the least. And I love that he just kept it real with me about that, because that's 1,000% true. And that's, again, that's why I said you have to, when it comes to position coaches, unless there's just such a bad downgrade or decrease in production, you have to wait till year three. Year three is the judgment year. I always try to give coaches at least 2 years to begin to turn the ship a little bit.
Yep. Back to the answer to your question. I thought it was so interesting to hear it put in a way that he said, yes, we've got a lot of stacked boxes, but they also have to deal with a stacked formation.
Yeah.
So essentially what he's saying is, okay, you know, the last couple of years they've stacked the boxes because we can't pass, right? Now this year they're stacking the box maybe because, sure, our passing game is still developing, but it's also because they know the run game has been effective through three or four games now. But then the counter to the counter is, but we're gonna hit you with some of these formations that I'm talking about that a lot of schools aren't putting out there. And now the receivers are in on the formation, and you have to deal with all the blockers that we're bringing to your stack box. And so that was interesting to hear on why they're able to sort of stay out in front of a stack box and still average the crazy stat. I mean, that is a wild stat. That there may not be another running back in college football history that has averaged 10 yards a carry on a stack box. So
Derrick Henry might be the only close one.
But. Yeah. Well, aliens don't count.
Yeah.
So that was just really interesting to hear. And that was one of maybe 50 examples of things he said during this press conference where I just sat there and I was like, and it really hit me when he started to talk about Cade and how he thought this was his best game and how he grades a quarterback. And again, this is nothing against Brian. It could be. I'm not, you know, making the final call here. I think Brian knows a lot more and could explain a lot more about the ins and outs of football and even the quarterback position than we ever heard from him, because once things started to roll poorly, he was like, F you guys, I'm not giving you a bunch. He was on total defense.
I don't blame him for that.
I don't either.
I don't think anybody can blame the media for trying to.
Sure.
Brian, you know, it was just a clash of a bad situation. And
yep.
And I'll keep it real with you too, Tyler. Like, this is where I have sympathy for Brian. Brian should have never been in a position to be the quarterback coach.
I think especially just, that was
one of the worst decisions Kirk's made. And
I wish time,
just given the scrutiny, you're going to double and triple down. And again, I'm not trying to go down back into Brian, but I'm just saying this is what Tim Lester has had to like rebuild from. And that's my overall point about it.
And I, in the same way that I think Brian would have been maybe a slightly better offensive coordinator if he didn't have to worry about being a quarterback's coach as well, in the same breath, I think your offensive coordinator should be your quarterback's coach. I think that makes sense. In totality, in the end, bottom line, I think Brian is maybe one of the best offensive line coaches in the country at any level. And I love the aspiration of like, hey, could we be an offensive coordinator? I think O-line might be where he's best suited. He happened to play O-line. Tim Lester happened to be a pretty good quarterback.
Pretty damn good quarterback.
And the way that he talked about grading Cade, the way he talked about what the development of I am so excited because we are turning the corner now. You could probably say Sullivan's certainly dual threat. It's what we're using him as. Exclusively.
Yes.
And every other quarterback on the roster, especially the ones coming in, you could tell me their names. Let me try, actually.
Okay.
Risar, is he in the program yet or is he coming in next year?
Yep. Rizar's in the program. He's more of an athlete than a quarterback, in my opinion, right now.
Okay.
He has a lot to fix with his throwing mechanics, but that dude can run and he's a good athlete.
The kid in the class then that'll come in next year, he's a dual threat.
He is. His nickname is Jimmy Football.
Is it Jimmy Sullivan?
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go, dude. I pay attention to the recruiting trail. Come on now. And then didn't we just have somebody 2 weeks ago at Troy? There was a recruit.
His name's Cash Herrera.
Oh, from Cash, California. Dude. Cat. I mean, come on.
Come on. Right.
he's hired. We're making this, you know, we had CJ during my time, and then that, you know, my year ended with Nate, who was a step back in mobility, but Nate was just such a pure, I mean, I think even more now the fan base is looking at Nate Stanley like, damn, what a pocket passer. Guy was just, that's who you want if you're going to have a pocket passer.
He is one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in program history, especially given what came after him, and that's no shot at anybody who had to take over for him.
Yep.
The only knock on Nate Stanley was he couldn't win the big one against, you know, like couldn't beat Wisconsin, but he had the game against Ohio State. But he was one of the most consistent passers in program history.
Yep. We tried to tell him. The tide is turning to where like every quarterback on our roster, the knock on these quarterbacks is not going to be, well, they can't move, right? So if we get these guys who are more dynamic, are more shaped to play modern day football, and then you have this offense that Tim Lester is implementing, and you have Tim Lester as the quarterback guy. He's the one who's developing and evaluating the quarterback talent. God, I think the tide is turning, man. We're in the early stages. It might be a few years out from where people are like, oh, you know, the joke of Iowa not having a quarterback that can do anything or an offense that can do anything. I think we're on the ascension out of those national punchlines. I think we are.
It comes down to quarterback development, which has been probably one of the biggest criticisms in under Kirk, in my opinion.
Yeah, for his whole tenure, really.
Lester's a guy who I think can do it. And this is something I did want to talk about with the offense, too.
Yeah.
And you being in the program, you have more experience with this because I have my opinions on it. I was a little bit surprised that Tim said this publicly, was that he wanted to call a couple deep shots against Minnesota, and then the group shot him down. And you know what? This is where I'll keep it real. I'm happy the group shot him down. You can't throw a deep shot in there when Caleb Johnson is absolutely decimating Minnesota and you're flowing like that. I like the mindset, and that's something that Iowa has to do in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
And I know you need game reputation reps to actually make it happen. It was not the time to do it.
No,
I'm happy that Tim thought about it, but I actually think that was a pretty good decision not to, and just to let Caleb – and even Jazz. Jazz had a couple of really, really big runs in that game, too. The run game was just working against
– I told you with LeSean out.
Fix it.
I told you with LeSean out, like, Jazz is a little, like, mini adjacent version of Caleb Williams. Don't worry about the stats – or Caleb Johnson. The stats are what they are. He's going nuts. It's video game numbers. I'm telling you, the way he runs the ball, the way that he moves, sort of even the way that he looks, he's not as built as Caleb is. But Jazz is like, he is such a great, what I would consider a second option.
I'd have him as number two.
Four games in, and probably, you know, with LeSean hurt, Kamari's probably three and LeSean's four at this point. But again, the numbers don't matter. It's just what they give us and how many reps they can give us. You're right. Tim said a lot, and I think part of his endearment is and maybe people don't think he is, but he's so honest. He's just honest, and he's just telling you like it is. And he has a very good way of being optimistic about things, but like explaining why there's optimism, and you believe him, right? I don't think there's bullshit in him. I don't think there is.
I don't either. I think it's really going to help on the recruiting trail too.
You know where he was because really honest as well?
Go ahead.
Is he in a way, and Brian wasn't good at this because Brian, I think, was like, I think at one point, who was it? Was it Labus? Who he's like, you don't want to see him out there or something like that. And the way that he like was trying to be funny or like talk about guys specifically to the media.
Kirk when it came to Deuce Hogan.
Yes, I think that's maybe it just hasn't hit. But Lester straight up told us what most people would think is our best pure athlete at the receiver position. He's like, yeah, Caleb Brown he hasn't run routes correctly. He's not doing what he needs to do up here physically. Yeah. Probably one of our best athletes, biggest playmakers, but if he doesn't run the right routes, if he doesn't understand the playbook, if he doesn't understand versus what coverage, what kind of route he needs to run, that was a little nuance that he added in there. He's just not going to be the guy.
And that's where I have sympathy for Cade, by the way, too. That's where I have sympathy for Cade, because at times, you know, we don't know what play they're trying to run. Like, Cade can make a totally errant throw and everybody's going to blame Cade, but guess what? The receiver ran the wrong route.
Yeah,
I mean, Cade put Lester, right where he's supposed to be.
Lester said that they had a play versus Minnesota that should have been an easy, like a 10-yard out route or something, and the guy didn't cut off the route well enough, and he kind of rounded it instead. And all of a sudden it's second and 10 and people thought, oh, bad ball by Cade. No, bad route by the receiver.
Yeah.
And this is why, and it's never going to change because that's what it is. Like, you can't ask every fan to know football. And even if they know football, you don't know what was called. You don't know what checks were made. It's just, you're never going to know all the details, but and part of that is the timing stuff with the individual route running and stuff. But it's just like, man, when all of this does click and they double what they've got in the playbook right now, it feels very exciting.
That tells me that if Caleb Brown can figure it out and he's been as big of a playmaker as they say, and I'm not trying to hype him up too early because obviously a lot of things happen. I mean, Tyler, he could have a massive year next season.
He could go crazy. He could go absolutely crazy. I think we have the potential for that, and I do believe that something this offense needs. And again, I don't know if I like this will come back to sort of that second half play calling stuff, because he said, Lester said, we missed a couple. I had a couple called that we checked out of, talking about this vertical passing game.
Yep.
You guys pressed him on it like once or two or three times. And he's like, yeah, I had a couple called. We missed a couple. We checked out of a couple. And then in the second half, I had several that were set up. We just didn't need them. And he's right.
Yep, they didn't.
When you give the ball to Caleb Johnson and it's just 10 yards a pop, why would you call a seam route? You just
no, exactly. And that's the other part of it too. Like, what if Iowa called it and then you know, Kate and they throws throw a pick and then yeah. then everybody's pissed off at Kate and everybody's pissed off at Lester. Yeah. Like, but you know, it was not worth the risk unless they're forced to call. That's why, like, that opening drive against Minnesota arguably saved the season, in my opinion, from the outside, because they had that
in
that
the second
play
half
to Lachey. They had that play to Ostranga for 19 yep. yards.
The second Caleb, half, like the 5-play drive, yeah.
Yes, that saved the season, in my opinion. I think that totally changed the momentum of the game.
You know what it did for me was, a lot of times in the Iowa games the last couple years, you just felt like usually in that situation, you struggle in the first half. You're like, God, our offense can't do anything. You come out in that second half, we get the ball.
Same thing.
You should be excited, and you're like, there's no way we're going anywhere. Like, there's no way that something changes here. And yep. then in 5 plays, we're down the field and in the end zone, and I'm just sitting there going, none of that made sense.
I thought the same thing.
Compared to what I'm used to. Like, we run an awesome – I mean, they brought the house and showed heavy action to the left side of the field, booed out Ostranga. I think he went for like 20 or 30 yards, got it to midfield. Then we rip one off. In like 2 or 3 plays, we're in the red zone, and you're like, well, that's not Iowa offense, is it?
Holy Iowa's smokes. Halftime adjustments besides the Iowa State game has been spectacular.
Yeah. And he talked about that. He's like, we've been doing an awesome job of making adjustments at halftime. Like, we've been great at that. Also mentioned specifically with the offensive line that because they're veteran guys, a lot of the mistakes or things that they're seeing in the first half, those guys are auto-correcting because of their experience, and that's why we're making such a big difference. And yep. I get it. As a fan at home, you're sitting there thinking, well, we can't just wait till halftime to start playing well every game. Obviously, that's not what they're doing on purpose, but at least they're at halftime, you can see the significant difference, the significant changes that they're making. It's crazy. I do think, and we still lack that vertical passing game. Whether you know they need more time, we don't have the athletes. Cade, in all honesty, is probably not your best vertical passer in the country. Even if we had the full offense in the playbook, right? I do think we have to. I think Cade, similar to week one when he threw a couple balls up to Reese, and he's just like, "Hey, buddy, make a play." I think we need one or two more of those a game where we just. Where you just trust the receiver to like, hey, and if you're not going to catch it, you become the defender and make sure it doesn't get picked. And hey, then we took a shot, right?
I think the other thing we need to talk, like, really address too is, look, Cade had a couple bad throws, I think, in that game. There were a couple obvious drops where Cade did put the ball in the money.
Yep.
But one of the best passes I've seen Cade throw this year was the one that they ruled incomplete at the 2-yard line.
Oh,
Franga. That was as perfect of a pass as you could ask for. It's a difficult catch, no doubt. But Ostranga read it well. He put it in a position where only Ostranga could get it. And he just, I mean, that was a dot by Cade.
Yeah. I think that all in all, I think if you ask your average Iowa fan right now, like, is there really any, compared to the last 2 years, is there really anything you can complain about? A reasonable person would say, not really. I mean, we've improved. Like I said before, Cade not blowing anybody out of the water, but the floor is so much higher than what we've had the last
That's year. Yeah, no question. I mean, like, you still have to be better than 122nd passing offense.
And sure.
It's crazy that's still an improvement. I do think, though, if there's any reason to be encouraged, I think the wide receiver room is more talented than any of us thought. I still don't know what the ceiling is for them. I don't think it's an elite room by any means.
No, but...
But they can get the job done. Like, you can see the pieces that are building there. Like, Reese could be a red zone dog.
Yeah.
Love asking Astranga. Astranga could start for 100 different teams around the country, 115 probably. No, seriously, he's that good. Jacob Gill has been just unbelievably consistent in everything he does.
Yeah, he's when he came over, it was like, oh, we got Sullivan, the quarterback, and his buddy receiver. I guess like we're just taking we're just taking the Northwestern.
Well, we didn't even know if he was on scholarship when you took him.
Right.
And just because we looked at the stats and we're like, okay, like it's a body.
He's the most out of nowhere player that we have this year. And yeah. I think Reese could be, you give Reese, I work with a lot of athletes and people generally on the fitness, weight room, lifting, workout side of things. You look at Reese and like, you just know he's a 19-year-old this offseason with a frame. He could become dangerously physical on the outside over the next
great week. Catch too. Love how Cade trusted him in that second half when he needed a big catch. And Reese, you know, Reese had a couple drops over the last couple weeks. So for him to go right back to Reese and for Reese to make that play, I think that's going to really boost his confidence up too.
A lot of offensive talk. I want to swing it over because I don't want to use David's entire day up. And I want to get to some more, a couple more points of what Coach Parker said, and then we'll finish with some Coach Woods. Coach Parker said basically you put Lee and Hall and Nestor in a bag and just pull one out. The talent level is very, very close. It's basically about game flow. Who they feel the best at that time is going to help them win. Maybe not the best thing. You'd love to have just two clear guys with Jamari on the other side, who's a stud, by the way. He's going to start in the NFL, I think, maybe. But the... You know, it's a close battle. They've got three guys basically, and they're doing something similar at safety with Xavier and Cohen. And he was like very upfront. He's like, hey, these guys are competitive. You know, he was vague, but he's like, it's competitive. They're all making good plays. He said Xavier had his best practice like yesterday or Monday.
Tim said the same thing about Caleb Brown too. We should probably throw that in there too.
And I know when people hear that, they hear what the last few years of like, oh, Spencer Petras had great practice. I think like that's legitimate.
Yeah.
When at least when I was there and then I would see that coach said somebody had a good practice, it was always like, yeah, that guy did ball out today. Like they are getting better and better every single day. He said that they've to eliminate some of those big plays and like people were just kind of getting at, you know, hey, you've been a little bit more lackadaisical on giving up these big plays this year. He said they focused a lot on alignment, like pre-snap alignment. And I think that is something, especially for young players, especially for the entire defense as a whole. Like when you Josie Jewell is a good football player because he was always in the right spot. And I think to some extent, Jay Higgins and Nick Jackson are both that way too. When the entire defense gets their alignment correct, whether you know it's a run fit or it's a back end coverage, that's a big thing. That's the kind of thing that gets better week over week, especially when you have a bye week.
I mean, Jay Higgins is as good as Jay Higgins is because he's a film room savant. He's a guy who understands the game at a high level, and he makes the plays when they're offered. Because, like, with all due respect to Jay Higgins, and he is a good athlete. He is not an elite athlete as far as the linebacker goes.
No, he doesn't have top-end speed.
But if you listen to him describe, like, that interception he had in that Minnesota game, he literally told us, I watched this on film all week. When they line up in a certain formation, Brosmer will always check down after 3 seconds. So Jay waited – counted to three and then made a play on the ball.
Yeah. I think that's better play.
Jay Higgins succeeds.
Awesome to get the interception. Obviously, it meant more. I think the best play he made in that game was when he lined up on the inside receiver, the three receiver. They went empty and he was on the wide side of the field and he tracked this receiver on an under route across and made the play. And sure, Brosmer could have led the receiver a little bit more. The receiver was not at full speed, but Jay ran with an inside. Like running back across the field, as big as he is, and made that play as a Mike linebacker. Like, dude is just playing. They're so good.
He's all American.
For sure. And then the last thing on defense I'll say that I caught was, you know, they asked about Castro being less impressive, big play wise, pressure wise, stat wise. And Coach Parker sort of alluded to Yeah, he might not have the stats or like the flashy things that are happening, but I guarantee you the opposing offense is going, hey, where's 29? Where's 29? And I think that's something that goes under talked about or sort of just under the radar. Absolutely. Like from a fan perspective in the media, we're kind of like, oh yeah, Castro's like, he's doing good, but he's not having a great year. Yeah, it's because they're avoiding him. Like
I think at times he's missed a couple plays that I think certainly. He would have made last year. I mean,
yeah.
But Castro is still making a huge impact on defense. Yep. I know there's reps that he'd rather have back this season, but he's going to apply that for the rest of the season. He's going to be better for that. And on top of that, you know what it reminds me of? Not to the same degree. It reminds me of like when they had Desmond King.
I was just going to say Desmond.
If you're an All-American with 8 picks and you come back for another year, or if you make all these plays, guess what? They're not throwing the ball to you.
Go look at the stats. They're not going to. Anybody listening, please go look at the stats of the like the throw chart of teams in 2016. Teams did not throw to an entire side of the field because Desmond was over there. Desmond only ended up with like 2 picks that year.
2 picks, but he's still a Jim Thorpe finalist because he shut down half the field.
He literally closed down, I think a field is 53 yards across. He closed down 26 yards of horizontal space because he was just there.
And we all talk about, think about this. Like, I feel bad for whoever lined up opposite corner of Desmond and Josh and all those guys. They could still be damn good. But they're getting targeted every play because they don't want to throw the ball. Like Maven still ended up as an NFL guy for a decade.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
and
Maven
he got targeted and he got criticized like crazy.
And I remember it too. There was so many throws that went Maben's way on the other side. And ridiculous. I think for a while there it would have been Reese. Now I'm blanking on his last name. I can't remember. Reese. Oh my God. Holy smokes. Somebody's saying it right now as they listen to us, but that's the effect that Castro's having right now is like the other team, the other quarterback knows probably don't want to throw too close to his way. We don't want to give him an opportunity to change the game right now. So good stuff from Phil Parker as well. And then we'll finish here. We'll wrap it up with Coach Woods. My favorite to listen to, although Lester making a hard case, so fun to listen to. Talked about how Reese knew that punt against Troy was not good. Everybody knew the punt was not good. Everybody knew the coverage was not good. They heard about it at halftime. That is not something that usually
would have loved to be a fly on top of that.
God, I want to know what Coach Woods, because Coach Woods stays pretty low key. He's pretty level.
When he gets after it though.
Oh, they got their the punt coverage unit got their ass reamed at halftime of that Troy game. And I glad I'm not there, because if I was there, I would have been on that. But definitely wish I could be a fly on the wall for that. But they talk about how everybody knows Reese can smoke it. They know he can do what he did this past weekend. He opened it up with, you know, what he's done this season is really a microcosm of what they've seen in totality with Reese. It's just a fight for consistency at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I asked him if it was, you know, like if he said anything to him throughout the week or if this really – speaks to Reese's maturity and level-headedness, because that's interesting. You talked about a half hour ago about the mentality of being a specialist and the way you have to approach everything. And I think Reese put that on full display, and to understand that as a true freshman who, by the way, is not even from this continent.
Yeah.
That showed me a lot.
Yeah. He said something in the answer to your question of the focal point of, and this is maybe hard to understand. And I think the best analogy is like, maybe shooting free throws. More people have played basketball and shot a basketball than have tried to punt, snap, or kick. Sure. When you're a specialist, there's in large part two ways that you approach the position. And when you can get to, it's a mental thing. Again, going back to the mental side of the nature of the position. A lot of guys are kicking, and this is like almost everybody in high school. They're trying to not miss, right? I just don't want to miss. I don't want to hit a bad ball. When you cross over the threshold of I'm no longer trying to not miss, I'm seeing how good I can make this, how far I can kick this, how good of a field goal, how pinpoint accuracy I can be. It's very similar to like maybe the at large style of play that Kirk plays, or people like to say that he plays, is like he's not trying to win the game. He's trying to not lose when he gets up, right? It's the same thing within this specific area of kicking or punting. There was a while there in my first year starting in 2014 where when I was snapping the ball, I was just trying to get it to the guy. I just didn't want to throw it over his head. In my head, that's how I thought about it. I don't want to throw this over his head. And then later on in my career, it was, how pinpoint could this be if I could just hit this one little pin head size dot on his hip? And it's aim small, miss small. When you start to be more confident, Coach Woods used the words, he wanted them to be the aggressor and they wanted to go on the attack. When you start to have that mentality as a specialist, now you get loose. Now you get freed up and you get to see your true potential. And we got to see that 50 yards, 50 yard average, no returns. It was huge.
As much as we have to dumb down the game to a certain degree when we talk about the larger scope of college football and we're talking to college football fans and even me at times, right? And media members.
Me too.
It's so interesting when you get those little snippets like that from LeVar, and it also just makes me think and should make other people think like, oh my God, this goes a lot deeper than you actually think.
It's so deep.
Like it's such a simple game, but it's so complex.
Even just like, you know, a punter, a kicker, a snapper, they essentially do one thing over and over and over again. All the other positions, they have to do a lot of things over and over and over again. And even just for the snapping, kicking, punting, the detail of which, like, the angle of your foot versus the angle of, like, the little details of kicking, punting, snapping could just blow your mind, and then it goes a million miles further than that. Yeah. Talked about
Stevens. Stevens. Yep. Like that was some compelling stuff too. Cause again, you talk about coaches keeping it real. LeVar keeps it as real as it was. He even said like, yeah, Drew had false confidence last year.
Yeah.
And that was really telling to me. He said, no, he's got it now. He's reading maybe 1 to 2 pages a day, but he's reading now. He said, this is what the real confidence looks like. And Drew's playing like he has real confidence.
And false confidence is better than no confidence.
Yeah.
Right. But
how do you respond when you get called out on that false confidence?
When you catch an obstacle, when you catch a little bump in the road, that false confidence gets real shaky and you start to feel like a fraud versus what he said is he now has conviction over confidence, which was an awesome distinction. Love that out of Coach Woods. Great way to put it. I think I can tell. I've been saying it all along because I'm a geek and I'm the only one who watches it. But like every time Stevens has hit a kickoff, I'm like, God damn, that's
booted. I mean, even Woods, I think, was stunned that Minnesota returned four of them. And they weren't bad balls by Stevens. The Minnesota guy just thought he could break one.
They were really trying to like make something happen there. Stupid by their return team.
I don't think they ever got past the 20.
No, great coverage. The kick coverage team is looking great this year. Kind of some low-key things that came out of Coach Woods' mouth was like, one, he's not a fan of PFF, and I don't think any coaches are, which makes sense because PFF acts like they have all the stuff right, and they don't, because, again, they don't know the calls.
Do you remember after Nate – I'll go back to a PFF. Like, I think they do a lot of things well, but there's some things where you're just sitting there going, what the hell are you watching? Remember when Nate Stanley threw 5 touchdowns against Ohio State? Of course
he did.
Yeah, he wasn't even the Big Ten quarterback of the week. It was a guy who threw, like, 2 picks.
Yeah, that's weird. And then also, he didn't want to say numbers specifically, but if you watch Drew kick and you know anything about it and you listen to Coach Woods, somebody asked him about like, hey, you thought – maybe it was you who asked about
– I think it was Steppy.
Asked about kicking the field goal at the end of the Iowa State game, and they're like, yeah, we didn't really think about it, but we've kind of looked at it since then. He mentioned like in the NFL, you see these guys that are in the mid-60s now on these top-end field goals. Like, yes, it's tough to do in a game. It's mentally like a huge mind F because you're just like, okay, I'm back here. I really got to put something into it. Drew Stevens can kick a 60-yard field goal.
I believe that.
I know for a fact. And also just based off the fact that every kicker I ever played with, even the ones who didn't play in the games, like our twos and our threes, other than maybe Keith, I think Keith might be the only one. I saw and snapped in practice for multiple 60-yard field goals. Like we were kicking off of the 50-yard line.
Yeah.
And I saw Marshall Kane, Alden Hafar, Josh Prohl.
Absolutely.
Everybody. They could smoke
How I should know this at the top of my head. How far was the game winner against Pitt? Wasn't that like 56?
57. Yep, 57.
57, okay.
And it was probably good from another 2 yard. It might have been good from 60. I think it bounces through on 60. So, it probably was good.
It was close, man. I remember that, but
yeah. So good to know that Drew has it, and like it's very visible. And then the last thing was he said that Drew – I think Drew said this himself, maybe, that he's more process oriented now and not as much of a feel guy. And I chuckled at that because Coach Woods said something like, at some point, every specialist starts to understand that you can't just go out there and just feel it out every time.
Yeah.
You have to have some sort of process. And that is true. Like there's got to be some structure to what you do. But I personally was very much a feel guy. I'll never forget. There was a time my senior year where, like, for some reason, not accuracy wise, but like the spin of the ball, it was coming out like a duck.
Yeah.
And I just decided to not snap for 2 weeks in the middle of the season. Like, I did not snap balls at practice. I was just like, I know what I'm doing. Every snap that I'm doing is just coming out wrong. I did it for period. It was like a 7 minute punt period at the beginning of the period. I didn't do anything for the rest of practice, and it just self-corrected after 2 weeks. I was like, it's just a feel thing. Like, I just need to get it out.
That's interesting.
But it's fun to hear because a lot of guys do need that process. Like, it is a very – specialists sure. are very heady. Specialists are very overthinkers, and they just – I just think about Miguel Racinos, who just texted me this morning. He's got, like, 8 months until he's a doctor now. Fun stuff out of them, and – personally, I think we should kick more field goals. I know that's like a weird thing. It's like, okay, but
I've been surprised they have not even attempted a 50 yarder this year.
It's a mistake, man. I'm telling you,
48.
And I don't know how many. It's a very unique situation where you get close enough. You're kind of at the 30, 33 to 40 yard line heading in, and you get stopped. And now you have a decision: do we go for it? Do we do a short punt, or do we kick the field goal? I think in those situations, like, I think we should kick more field goals. I think Drew makes them. I think we get more points. But, hey, I get it. Field position, you know, maybe there are times where we should go for it. But, you know, I'm just
– I do wish we got the coordinators more. I really hope with the second bye week, I hope we get the coordinators.
Please.
I'm going to ask. I think I'm not going to be the only one that asks. But it's just – it really helps us just kind of get inside their minds about what they're thinking because – you know, I'm very opinionated. A lot of us are very opinionated, but like, I never want to act like I know what they're thinking. I can only go based on what I'm thinking, and I can explain in my own words what I think they're thinking. But like, the insight that they gave us yesterday, like that yesterday was one of my favorite press conferences I've had since I started the job in 2018. It was as informative as I can remember.
It was
transparent. It was great. And that helps me. That helps everybody else.
I got the same vibe. I was 6 minutes into listening to Lester, who was up first, and I was just like, "Oh, this is gonna be fantastic." I immediately was like, "Oh, me and David are gonna have so much to talk about," which we did. 58 minutes on the ticker on my screen.
Yeah, I think I was literally about to text you, but I was typing up a couple of things. But I was gonna text you like, "Oh, I don't know if you're watching, but this is gonna be good."
Heater. Which is good because today's my birthday, so I decided. Plus, we didn't have an episode to really preview this week, so we're not doing a
Happy
main episode.
Happy birthday, Tyler.
Thank you. 30 years Happy old. Birthday. 30 years old, into the 30s, feel better than ever. And
hopefully I have the same vibe in 8 months. I'll be joining you in the 30s club.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's great. We are not going to do a main episode this week, so the David Eicholt and Tyler Kluver press review is the Thursday episode. You guys are not hearing this on Wednesday when we record it. You'll hear it one day later. It's the main feature. We are excited to be back next week. OSU preview. Maybe the boys can go in and do something. I don't know.
Caleb Johnson revenge game.
It's why they play
Never
the games.
Never got recruited from Ohio.
True. It's why they play the games. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back with the 5-10-5 show tomorrow with Coach Justin Lima, and then we will have a Monday recap of the college football weekend for you guys in a few days. We will see you then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.